Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Ken Pitts. Welcome, Ken. It's great to have you with me.
Well, it's terrific to be here. Thank you for the invitation and opportunity.
We start at the beginning with these, and I'm pretty sure that you are not a native Oregonian. So where did you take your first breath?
My first breath was in Perryton, Texas. If you can picture that square at the top of Texas, I'm just over in the right-hand corner, and there's a place called Perryton, a place of about 15,000 people, and I was born in 1955. Perryton, Texas, to farmers in the Panhandle, wheat farmers, dairy farmers. That's what my parents and family did at that time.
And was that basically their home area?
It was for my dad. And so they homesteaded that area. His great-grandfather homesteaded it. And then he and his father, when I was born, my grandfather was still alive, and both of them farmed about three sections of land, which would be like 3 square miles of wheat farm and feed for the dairy cattle.
And about how many acres is that?
I think that it's like 640 acres per square mile. Some of that was leased land. The section that we were on was the land that we owned.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
I am a middle child. But not the traditional middle child. I had an older brother, and I have a younger sister. We were 3 years apart. And my brother, kind of a big trial for our family, was that he had fever when he was really young. And in his first several years of life, he had a fever that was too high, and they weren't able to bring it down. And so it created scar tissue that was on his cerebellum. And then over the years, like starting in middle school, he started losing his coordination until a point where he couldn't walk in his 20s, and then needed complete care by 28 through 50, which he lived to be. And so it was just, for me, it didn't feel like I was a middle child, because Don was so impaired. And then my younger sister, Pam, she is an administrator of a surgical hospital in Wichita, Kansas, the heart hospital there.
So because your brother needed help, did that make a difference in what some of your responsibilities were as you were growing up?
My parents took care of him. He actually graduated from high school, but my parents were the main caregivers for him. In my early years of working, I would go and be with him at their house and help take care of him. So that would have been, you know, in my mid-20s. And so I helped until we got him into a situation that was full care for him, so that he could be with people that also had challenges.
What was one of the advantages of growing up on a farm?
Oh, for me, the ability to, yes, I had chores, you know, and I wouldn't, at the time, I didn't think that was an advantage, but I would wake up every morning at 4:30 and go milk 70 plus Holstein cows with my father. And that was an every morning thing and an every evening thing. But the part that I was getting to is that would have been like up through fourth grade. Although that in-between time, I didn't have a lot of chores and responsibilities, and I had the opportunity to just get out and wander all over that land. And so I figured out every bird, every snake, every lizard, every mammal, everything that was out there. And I just really got to know that. And I fell in love with nature, because for me as a kid, just the happiest I could possibly be was either out by myself and getting to know all this stuff, or taking, let's see, my mother had piano lessons. And so the kids would come as families, and I would take them out and show them all the things that I had found. And so it was just this really great it's kind of what I do today. You know, I take people out to Steigerwald as a volunteer and show them all the things that I have found out and experience that. But that was the advantage for me. I fell in love with nature, so I ended up being a biology teacher so that I could go out and take kids on field trips and do that.
Did you have any kind of a little creek or stream or anything running through your property, or one that you had access to by any chance?
Oh, I wish. There was one. There was a place that is just the oasis of my dreams. This is a panhandle of Texas, right? And it, for the most part, it was a pretty dry place. But there were these spring-fed water holes that were at a friend's house, probably 5 or 6 miles away. And it just was the place we went on holidays and had picnics and fished. And I just, that was a place I still dream of being. It's fun how that has followed me all these years. I have anxiety about whether we're going to get to go do that or not, because I just considered that so much fun. And part of it was there were just so many creatures that were concentrated around those springs. And so there would be about 4 or 5 ponds that were there. And it just was a great place to go and explore and fish and learn about nature.
This is not a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you have a favorite creature in the natural world?
I have a lot of favorites, but, you know, just the one that just comes right to the top of my mind, there is a little bird called a bush tit, and they weigh just a tiny bit more than what an Anna's hummingbird does. But these little bush tits are, you know, they're all over this area, and they move in groups of anywhere from 2 to 50, but they're community people. I mean, they're community birds, and they move together. And it's like I can see Mennonites in these little birds when they are flying around and trying to determine. Like I put a bubbler fountain out, and all the other birds within a couple of days are coming to it. But the bush tit community would come up, and they would look at that fountain and looking at the other birds, but then they would look back to the rest of the community to see, are we going to do that? Or is that something we're going to do as a community? And for days and for over a week, they just continued to eye that fountain, and one started to go for it and then decided to go back to the community. But when they came, it was like all 50 of them, they just completely covered that fountain. And it was just awesome community event. So bush tits. I love bush tits.
That's a great segue. Tell me about church growing up.
So my father was my father's family and my mother were Quakers in the Friends Church. Mom was from a Friends Church in Colorado Springs. And dad was from Booker, Texas. So our church in Booker was pretty much everything other than our farm. It's like, what did we do besides farm? We went to church. There was Sunday morning, and that always involved Sunday school. Sunday school was not an option. It was something that we'd all do, and we participate in classes. And then there's Sunday evening church, and then there's Wednesday prayer meeting. And then there were other special meetings that you know, we would often go to. But if we weren't farming, we were churching. That was, you know, in the panhandle of Texas, it's a hard living doing farming. But there was always time, even in the middle of harvest, to just stop, even if the wheat could still be cut, and go to prayer meeting. Or on Sunday, the wheat's drying out and we could be cutting that. But no, this is Sunday morning and we go to church. So it was pretty structured. It was our community. And again, all white. And it was the only world that I knew.
Was this a silent meeting, or was silence any part of those meetings?
That's a good question. No. We were probably not much different than a fundamentalist Baptist church.
And was it fairly conservative?
Yes. So when we were in Texas, that would be a very conservative church. I just remember those days being scary days to me as a kid, because I would go to revival meetings and, you know, there was just like, oh, a lot of hocus pocus going on there, it seemed. And missionaries talking about casting out evil spirits and horrible things that are happening on the mission field, and demons. And that made it kind of a scary hocus pocus world that, you know, I didn't really like that world. I didn't really understand that world. And so when my father went to become a minister, he was called when I was in fourth grade, he became a Quaker minister, spent 5 years in Liberal Kansas, decided he needed more education, and went to Indiana Earlham School of Religion. And that is where, like, new worlds of religion opened up. And our family, just as a whole, my immediate family, moved away from fundamentalism.
So when your father was going to those various places, the whole family was moving to them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Liberal was 70 miles away from Booker, and that was his first church, Liberal Kansas. And then we were in Winchester and Union City, Indiana, north of Richmond, Indiana. As he went to Earlham School of Religion. And then I came back to Kansas to go to Friends University, since I was a Quaker. And they offered good financial packages as a benefit to Quaker ministers' kids.
Is it safe to say that you went to public school through high school?
All the way.
And you said that you majored in biology. When did you make that decision? When did you realize that this was where you wanted to go? Was that still in high school? Was it college?
Well, I knew I liked biology in high school. And the teacher would ask me for my opinion. And then he would say, "Are you sure about that?" And I would say, "Well, I'm as positive as I can be." So he started calling me Positive Fitz. I got I seemed to understand the natural world a little better than most of my classmates when I was in high school, but I hadn't decided, oh, this is what I want to do. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I wanted to go to college. So given the opportunity to go to college, it was probably my second year in college that I met Dr. George Potts, who was a biology and anatomy physiology teacher in the biology department at Friends University. And as I watched him, I just thought, wow, I would love to do that. He is having so much fun, and he's getting to learn about the things deeper that I really care about. So sort of then, and then I went into education. I hadn't made that decision yet, but my junior year went into education and then did my student teaching. When I was a student teacher, I saw that this was the career for me. I had so much fun. I didn't really know that. I kind of felt lost up to that point. But when at the moment that I did my student teaching, which was, you know, I went into this teaching career just kind of thinking, yeah, I could do that. But this Dr. George Potts probably said some of the most meaningful words I ever said in my life when he came and defended me in a meeting because I'd kind of got crossways with some professors and they were even considering kicking me out of the education department. Just one that we had a disagreement. And he came and he just said, that would be the biggest mistake we've ever made. This is one of the few students we have that truly has the magic. And then he got together with me and he talked more about that because I had no idea. I had no idea that I had, quote, the magic to be a teacher. And so I experienced that then once that I went into the classroom, that when I was talking to people, teaching classes, that I had connection. I could make connections, emotional connections with the kids and work that. And I had so much fun. And finally, I understood what he meant by Ken has the magic. So Dr. Potts, he would be the guy that I give credit for. Dr. George Potts, who lives now in Salina, Kansas. I'd give him the credit for having inspired me to head that direction.
after you graduated from college, it was fairly clear to you or from university that you were going to be a biology teacher in what, in a high school or what level?
Oh, good question. My first year, I actually went back to Booker, Texas, which was where our farm had been. And then we had moved away. I was offered a job there and I taught 7th grade life science, 8th grade earth science, freshman physical science, 2 classes of sophomore biology, advanced biology, and senior chemistry. That's 6 preparations that I taught for the 2 years that I was there. And I still loved it. So high school mostly, but just a few years of middle school. I also was an elementary resource person for part of the 33 years that I was a teacher. I would go to the elementary and help their teachers with gee whiz wowie science with Mr. Pitts.
I'm sure that in 33 years you met hundreds of students, but is there anybody that stands out for you?
Yes. Yes. There are a lot that stand out, but I just want to say I had one student. His name was Jeff Newberry. He'd go kick out of the fact that I am saying this, and it was in Cheney, Kansas. And Jeff, when he walked in my biology class, I didn't know who he was, and he was just hyperactive and seemed to make sounds that, you know, I thought, oh, this is going to be a problem. Got to get this under control, you know. And again, I had models of how all these other teachers were doing it, even though maybe I would do it my own way. But I just thought, this kid, I don't know if I'm going to like him or not. But in the end, I just thought he was the most awesome student to have in class, because whatever I was saying, I could look at Jeff and he would, I could see it. I could see it in the way he positioned his body. And if there was ever sound effects that needed to be made, you know, he could look like a, like in the cell, there's this thing called the Golgi bodies or the Golgi apparatus. He's the only student that I ever had that like would act out all of these and even make the sounds for that Golgi apparatus. And it was just a pleasure to have him. And it was like, he was helping out and helping engage the class in an appropriate way, and one that I just went with it. And it was such an honor to have him in class.
Well, somehow you got connected with the Mennonites. What's that story?
Oh, boy. Yes. When I was teaching in Cheney, Kansas, it was about 20 miles away from Wichita, Kansas. And in Wichita, there was Friends University. And a couple of blocks from Friends University was University Friends Church. And so I didn't go every Sunday, but I was attending university, especially on the mornings that I had agreed to do children's church for them. And I would, I really enjoyed doing that. Well, during that time, my wife was one of 6 pastors on the team, and she had just graduated from Princeton Seminary. I was a bit intimidated by that, but it ended up that probably about a year after we met there, we were married.
Let's so, get her name so people know who you're
right,
actually talking about.
Catherine Jamison Pitts, who is the PNMC, Pacific Northwest Mennonite Conference, Executive Conference Minister. But the reason I tell you that story is because we didn't go back to that church after we were married, because when we started having kids, she decided not to be a minister. So we went church hunting, tried out the Presbyterian church. Her mother came from a Presbyterian background, which is one of the reasons she went to Princeton Seminary. And in that church hunting time, while we were Presbyterians and made friends there, there were some of our friends that were not real happy with what's happening in the Presbyterian church. And they went church hunting and came back and said, we just attended a church that we think is perfect for your family. we went to Hope Mennonite Church. And so we went and tried Hope Mennonite and fell in love with it. We fit right in there. And we found out after we started going that the minister lived behind us a few houses down, kind of across. We lived in a home association, and he got into conversations with Catherine over time. And when he became a conference minister, he came to her and said, "Boy, I sure would like for you to, an MLA, or where you put out the information needed to become a pastor." And we became Mennonites, and then she became a Mennonite pastor, and we have been there ever since.
And this Hope Mennonite, was that in Wichita?
It was on the west side of Wichita. It was a suburb church. Wichita grew all directions, and we were in that western growth into the suburbs. Lots of families that came from Heston and Mound Ridge and Mennonite communities north of Wichita that needed a church.
Do you know what it was, quote unquote, that made Mennonites or this Mennonite church a perfect fit for your family?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer, I think. Not because I don't have an answer, but because there are a lot of things that come up in my mind. Just for me personally, I have to have some room for questioning. I don't want to come to a church that it's black and white. You know, there is right and there is wrong, and we are right, and you better line up or you're wrong. That's not for me. I had a lot of questions about faith, and I felt that when I was a part of that church, that I could continue to ask us questions and felt invited to ask us questions. I just want to give a shout out to Marv Zare, who was that minister of that church at that time, because we had a lot of conversations that went along those lines of, wow, I'm learning all these things about science, and how does this fit in with what I know, what we know about God? And Marv was very invitational. He cast a wide net. And so that's a top reason for me, I think.
And you somehow ended up at Portland Mennonite. How did that happen?
Well, Catherine, again, come back to Catherine. She went to Reed College and loved living in the Portland area. She did her undergraduate work at Reed and always wanted to come back here. So when given the opportunity with her, we did quite a bit of moving. We moved from Wichita to Salina, Kansas, where she took a church there, and then to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where she took a church, and then back to Southern California, where she took a church. She was at Pasadena. And when given the opportunity to live in the Northwest versus Southern California, we jumped at it. And being somebody who absolutely loves nature and just, I just felt like Southern California was a disaster waiting to happen. And I know we have our issues here, but just millions of people and, you know, so many different things could go wrong. And I just, and I felt that the nature that I was observing there was being degraded in the mountains that were behind our house. And I was ready to get out of there and get to a different place. So I stayed another year after she came up here and got my youngest daughter, Abby, through high school and into college. And I mentored another teacher, a younger teacher, into my advanced placement environmental science position. I had built that program from 12 kids to over 120 kids that took the program over the 9 years that I was there. I didn't want that to die. So I put a lot of effort into doing that and then made my way here.
And how long have you been here?
I have been here 8 years. I think Catherine moved in 2012. I just asked her that while ago, and I moved up in 2013. I didn't go back into teaching here. I now work for Metro as a educator, but as a guest.
And still focused on the environment and
focused on the environment. Most of my presentations, in fact, all of them this year are focused on climate change. And so I engage about 300 classes a year, and I'm still doing that online, which we have a 4-day presentation that we engage them with what climate change is, understanding the system, understanding the system that's causing it, and then what are their talents and their passions, and how can those be used for action? And so that's what I spend 3 days a week doing now. Really enjoy it.
And we are almost done, but I have to mention that one of the things that you enjoy the most, in fact, we had to plan this interview around your being able to get out and take pictures of nature, which I might just quickly add, you share wonderfully on Facebook.
Oh, thank you.
If anybody wants to see what you're doing. So briefly, tell me about where you go, and you're out there again finding birds and all sorts of amazing sights.
Well, I am the type of person that doesn't like, I'm probably the opposite of you, Gloria. I just don't like to plan every detail about, you know, when it comes to nature. I like to wake up in the morning early enough that it's way before light and look at the weather and find out where the wind is the least and the sunshine is the most, and then go to that area. And it could be Ridgeville National Wildlife Refuge. It could be on the other side of the gorge over on the east side, or it could be down in the south of the Willamette Valley. But I like to go with what the day presents me, and I really enjoy just going out and being there. There are times that I will go after a particular photograph, but for the most part, I just want to be outside and be in the best place possible for that day.
Thank you so much, Ken, for taking time to give us this little glimpse into your life and your passions. It's been wonderful to hear some of your stories.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I enjoyed it.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.